It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Yeah, welcome to Monday's programme. Hope you've had a good weekend. Lovely day again in Salford. Spring has sprung. There's a cliche for you. It's lovely. Tweet the programme as usual. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'm on air with you for the next couple of hours. And I'm looking forward to today's show. In fact, I'm looking forward to the week ahead. So I am. All right, without further ado, Mark Boyarski joins the programme tonight, by the way. Can't wait for that. Mark Boyarski on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun show today.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I know you know who Mark Boyarski is. He's a very good friend of mine, a gentleman, an angel on earth, really. One of the most selfless and decent human beings I've ever had the good fortune to meet. He's the founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. And you can find out more about him at markboyarski.com. Looking forward to chatting with him. He'll be with me in around about a half an hour's time. And then we'll have a good old chin wag. And I do hope you'll join in with that. You can join in, you know that, don't you? Hey, yeah, you over there, you, yeah. I've had a good old day today. Lots going on. Lots going on, of course. And it's getting curiouser and curiouser, Lewis Carroll once said. Do you know what I was thinking today? Yeah. Turn it off, you big baldy bollocks. Oh, God, yeah. Monday. Told you, something about Monday, about things going wrong, about making mistakes. Could be that you got pished on Sunday and you're a bit shaky. But that isn't the case, actually. Oh, no, that isn't the case, actually. What's lovely about spring? What's lovely about spring so far, the fact that it has been so warm and bright, is that I bet you Greta Thunberg has a face like a bulldog chewing a wasp, right?
They sweep their mess under the carpet for our generation to clean up and solve.
How dare you? You have stolen my dreams, my childhood, with your empty words. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction. How dare you?
How dare you? Yeah, Greta with a face like a bulldog chewing a wasp is probably Greta's resting bitch face. Resting bitch face. I was genuinely thinking of her because I thought to myself, if it wasn't for coronavirus, Greta would be out going around the world addressing massive crowds, blaming the warm spring weather on the climate Armageddon. But she can't go anywhere, the little bastard. Anyway, yeah. I know it's dreadful to be calling a teenage girl a little bastard, but she is, you know. She is. Come here, did I tell you that there's an episode of Boardwalk Empire which stars Steve Buscemi or Buscemi? And I don't know if it's in season one. It is in season one. It is. And it's set on a train. And there is a girl actress on the train. Is the spitting image of Greta Thunberg. I was going to be a bit mischievous a few weeks ago and start claiming falsely that it was Greta Thunberg. Yes, I was going to put a bit of fake news out there for the crack, you know, for the crack. Let's get to more serious matters. Dejan Lovren is a football player and a very fine footballer is he. Some people would debate that. But he plays for Liverpool. He's a centre-half. And he's had his Twitter account suspended after the Daily Mail revealed that Dejan watched a David Icke interview and texted his appreciation of it on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. Yes. Dejan Lovren, football lad, doesn't believe the mainstream media narrative around coronavirus and is somebody who watches David Icke. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Of course. And while this was going on, this interview, Dejan took a couple of photographs, one of him watching it on his computer, or at least he took a picture of his computer. And then he gave the thumbs up to the interviewer and to David Icke. Well, we can't be having that. Oh no, be Jesus. So his Twitter account has been suspended by Twitter. But whether his people had anything to do with that or not, I don't know. I wish the account hadn't been suspended, because while I don't like to see anybody bullied or abused, I wanted to watch the avalanche of abuse that Lovren was inevitably going to get, so that I could use it as an example to talk about what's going on in terms of where we are. I spent a lot of time talking about what social media was designed to do. So poor old Dejan, you shouldn't be telling anybody, if you're famous, don't be telling anybody that you're interested in alternative points of view around COVID. And Michael Gove's wife, Sarah Vine, that's a bit unfair to Michael Gove's wife, Sarah Vine, apparently, because she's got her own career. She's a well-known journalist, writes for the Daily Mail, and has written for the Telegraph, I believe, and other publications as well. She tweeted a picture of her bookcase. Yes, or shelves with books on them. And in amongst her books was a book about the Second World War, written by David Irving. Yes, and also The Bell Curve. Now, I know some of you have read The Bell Curve, which examines intelligence levels among the races and is hugely controversial. But I haven't read it myself, nor have I read David Irving's books on war, although I'm told they're pretty good. So there you are. And she's been hammered and abused for reading some guy David Irving, because, of course, David Irving also is a Holocaust denier. So you can't be reading his books on war. You can't be reading The Bell Curve. You must be bigoted. You must be racist. These are very strange, very scary times, of course. Michael Gove, her husband, just mentioned him. Penfold. Google him. He's a squirrely little fecker. He gave the government's COVID-19 briefing yesterday afternoon, Sunday. And the briefing is where they give the nation the latest on the COVID. The latest on the virus. Okay? And it's generally chaired by either Dominic Raab or Matt Hancock, the health secretary. It was given by Gove yesterday. And he said, during answering several questions, he said there will be no return to normal until we have a vaccine. The BBC's Chris Mason asked Michael Gove, government minister, when can we return to normal? Here was Gove's response.
I think people have used the phrase a new normal. And by that, I think what they've sought to imply is that we can begin, we hope, as you quite rightly point out, as the R naught figure comes down, to ease some of the restrictions, but we have to do so in a cautious fashion. And the transport sector was right to say that we can begin to see perhaps more people use public transport, but provided they are helped to stagger or to control the times when they use public transport in the way that people have already adjusted to how they might use supermarkets and food shops and so on. Ultimately, unless and until we have a vaccine, then I suspect that we're going to have to live with some degree of constraint because of the nature of transport, in the way that people have already adjusted to how they might use supermarkets and food shops and so on. Ultimately, unless and until we have a vaccine and food shops and so on. Ultimately, unless and until we have a vaccine, then I suspect that we're going to have to live with some degree of constraint because of the nature of the virus. But we obviously want to, wherever possible and consistent with our measures on public health, restore people's lives to as close to normal as possible.
Key message, until there's a vaccine, nothing will return to normal. And from the get-go, from the outset, you and I, me and you, we've been speculating, I've been speculating in the monologues, ultimately this is what it's all about, the vaccine. There'll be no return to normal. Will you have a vaccine? Eventually. Now this is interesting because a very good friend of mine said today that many of those who say they will not have the vaccine will ultimately not have any choice. There's quite a lot of tough talk. Now you might say, well, you've been talking tough yourself, you big baldy gammon. Of course I have. I've got very thick skin. Yes, I have stated very clearly that I won't be having any vaccine. I'll have to give up my live concert attendance and all the rest of it. But a good friend of mine said today, and he made a good point, many people who say they won't will, even if they realise how tyrannical it is to be told that you must have it or else. And he made a very good point. He said, many of those who say they won't have it will, when they realise that, you know, they won't maybe be able to travel overseas to see their mother or their father or their grandmother or their grandfather. Little things like that might reconsider their anti-vaccine stance. And he made a very good point. And I said to him, well, the oft-mentioned Caroline, my better half, whose opinions on vaccines would be very similar to mine. Now, Caroline would have opinions that would be very different to mine. We're not very samey when it comes to our opinions, strangely enough. We have great tolerance of one another's opinions. But she sees vaccines like me. Her mum and her sister and her dad are in France, and her grandmother, who'll be 98 next birthday. Imagine they said, you ain't travelling, love, unless you have it. Well, automatically she comes under enormous pressure then to maybe reconsider. So a lot of people were saying, on a point of principle, it's tyrannical, nobody should be injecting me. And I've been saying for some time, they will not make this compulsory. They will make it almost impossible not to have. You see? And a good friend of mine said to me today, he's a wise old owl, he is. He said, a lot of people saying they won't have it, Richie, might have to have it. Anyway, Donald Trump has been saying, this is the US president, we might have a vaccine by late this year. And you know, strangely, old Donald is getting ridiculed for saying that. I don't understand why they're ridiculing him. He's only parroting what Sarah Gilbert from Oxford University has been saying in the UK for a number of weeks. Here's Sky's Rob Powell with the latest.
Yeah, and I think the reason why so much emphasis is being put on this is that we heard obviously from Michael Gove yesterday that actually we will all be living with some degree of disruption until a vaccine is found. So really, I think the government will be focusing today quite a bit on the test, trace and track strategy, with Matt Hancock laying out more details about that. But really, there is only so far that that can take you. I think the real true exit strategy will only come when that vaccine arrives. Remember, some of the scientists developing a vaccine at the moment that's currently going through clinical trials at Oxford University, the professor leading that, Sarah Gilbert, did say last month that if everything went to plan, she was 80% sure that this could work and sure that it could get out into the population, this vaccine, by the autumn. Now, the task for government, of course, is when a vaccine eventually comes along, have they put enough in place to manufacture that at scale? Because it could take quite a while, obviously, to bring it up to the sort of level you need to allow life to get back to normal. And then there are big political questions as well, of course, about who gets that vaccine first.
Yeah, well, people will beg for it. If you think iPhone queues are laughable and ridiculous, how many times over the years did you and me laugh at the fools, at the empty-headed, I'm not going to start ranting. The morons who queue for 3 or 4 days to get the latest iPhone, they will crawl for this vaccine when it emerges. Oh, they'll beg for it. It'll be historic. You think queues for theatre tickets in London or New York are bad? Oh, they'll beg for this vaccine. The UK business secretary is a guy called Alok Sharma. He was taking questions in the Commons today. What's the latest on the vaccine then, Mr. Sharma?
I announced the new vaccines task force on the 17th of April, which will expedite efforts to research and produce a coronavirus vaccine. Last week, thanks to the UK government's financial support of £20 million, the Oxford vaccine entered clinical trials in humans, and I can update the House that as of today, 601 people have taken part in that trial. We continue to talk to Oxford to understand its manufacturing needs, and colleagues will be aware they have announced a collaboration with AstraZeneca to ensure manufacturing capacity in the UK.
Yeah, you heard what he said at the very beginning, didn't you? This is very important now. We won't make too big a deal of it.
I announced the new vaccines task force on the 17th of April.
Yeah, back in mid-April, I announced the new vaccine task force. The vaccine task force, he mentioned, is staffed mostly by academics who have received grants either directly or indirectly from Bill Gates. Yes, your man, Mr. Depopulation, Bill Gates. That's the one, yeah. Nice to see a tiny bit of dissent in the lockdown. even if it happens by accident. Sky News invited Christopher Snowden, no relation to Edward. Christopher Snowden is works with the Institute of Economic Affairs. They brought him on to speak to presenter Colin Brazier, presumably to talk about the economic mess caused by the lockdown, which was completely unnecessary. But Christopher Snowden had more to say than just that the economy is fecked stupid. Here he is, the Institute of Economic Affairs, Professor Christopher Snowden.
We're in really uncharted territory. People understand why it was necessary in the short term. These restrictions were introduced for 3 weeks. Then they were extended by another 3 weeks. And now it looks like they may be extended for another 3 weeks. Every time there is an extension, the damage to the economy, to people's livelihoods, is increased enormously. And it seems to me that the original justification for this, which the public understood, which is what Boris Johnson said when he went on television on March 23rd, that we have to do this in order to prevent the NHS being overwhelmed and end up with people lying in corridors or at home and not being given the treatment they need. That has been achieved. And we seem to be seeing a moving of the goalpost now, talking about we've got to prevent a second wave of infections of any magnitude, it would seem, and perhaps they'll be moved again.
They will be moved again. He's worried that the public are supporting more lockdown rather than questioning it.
What really concerns me, actually, even more than what the government's doing, is the public support for the lockdown. That 77% of people, according to a poll last week, don't want the lockdown to end this Thursday when it comes up to its second review. 54% of people apparently want the lockdown extended so that public parks and playgrounds are closed down. So there seems to be, I don't know, I think there's two things going on here. I think one of them, which no one wants to talk about, is that for millions of people, they're having quite a nice time. It's a springtime staycation. The weather's been pretty good. They can kick back with a bottle of wine and watch some Netflix, and they're on full pay, or at least 80% of their pay. Some of them being furloughed don't have to do any work at all, and they haven't got any commuting expenses or any other work-related expenses. So a lot of people are being completely insulated from the tremendous economic damage that the lockdown's doing. The other side of the
and human cost, yeah, we need to say
and human cost, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. All the indirect deaths that are being caused by this, the domestic violence, I suspect there's going to be a rise in the suicide rate. Huge costs, but not for everybody. A lot of people, I think, are actually fairly happy with this situation at the moment. And then you have another set of people, and there could be some overlap, who I think have just been made excessively terrified by the coronavirus, that the government has done too much of a good job in making people concerned about it. And they now seem to think that everyone has to stay at home until there's a vaccine, until it disappears on its own. I don't know, but it's clearly not possible for us to carry on, lock ourselves in our homes in the hope that nobody ever catches this disease again.
It is fiendishly clever, this, isn't it, by this agenda? Fiendishly clever. They do it in a way that people will initially be delighted with it. Very well described there, very well articulated by Christopher Snowden from the Institute of Economic Affairs. Brilliantly articulated. That there has been no reaction, no negative reaction, no horror from the public, because initially most of the public were delighted with the opportunity to stay home and be off work. And it's so fiendishly clever. And that's how the furlough agenda, not the furlough agenda, but the furloughing of staff, you know, keeping people on pay with government help. Of course, this will all have to be paid back later on. But genius, because it kept people happy at home, as he said, drinking their bottle of wine and watching Netflix. It's evil. And the landscape that they will return to, it's horrific. It's Judge Dredd-esque what they've got coming down the line. It's absolutely astonishing that people can't see through it. But also, I can understand why, I can see now through what he said, why people were prepared to accept it. Don't worry, you won't lose a lot of money and you'll be able to stay home in the warm spring. And maybe the spring being warm and lovely, with lovely light winds and sunshine, maybe that's no coincidence, maybe. I don't know your talking with your conspiracy hat on you now, Richie. Maybe I am. Finally, Christopher Snowden from the Institute of Economic Affairs, finally, he goes and says something that causes him to be basically kicked off the show. Ah, Sky News, sure, we only love you.
I mean, I think the main thing is that the government at least, you know, does what it says it's going to do. And if it's met its objective, it needs to be very clear and give a very compelling reason why it is moving the goalposts again. As I say, the NHS has clearly not collapsed. The peak in deaths was about 4 weeks ago. The peak in infections was at least 6 weeks ago. We have flattened the curve. We have squashed a sombrero, and we're still living under these near-totalitarian laws. And the government has not explained why, and it hasn't explained when...
Okay. I just love... I'm going to just rewind it just a bit. Listen to him building up. And I know from experience, I've worked at every level of the media. The producer is screaming at Colin Brazier, get him off, get him off.
A compelling reason why it is moving the goalposts again.
Get him off.
I say, the NHS has clearly not collapsed. The peak in deaths was about 4 weeks ago. The peak in infections was at least 6 weeks ago. We have flattened the curve.
Get him off, Colin.
We have squashed a sombrero. And we're still living under these near-totalitarian laws.
Get him off.
And the government has not explained why, and it hasn't explained when it's going to stop.
Christopher Snowden, thought-provoking as ever. Appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
Thought-provoking as ever. Thanks very much. Fuck off now. Don't be saying totalitarian on here, Christopher. Don't be telling the truth. Don't be telling the truth that we passed the peak a long time ago, that the NHS hasn't collapsed, that the Nightingale hospitals are empty. There is tumbleweed blowing around the Nightingale hospitals of the UK. Christopher, get off! I love it, I love it, I love it. Hey, listen, do you fancy a bit of RK, the Ginger Ninja? Well, go on then. I said I wouldn't say vaudeville again, but I love saying it. So let's say Ringling Brothers Circus. The Ringling Brothers Duffy Circus on Sky News this morning. It was a madhouse. Sky News is persisting with reading the death notices of random people. Not well-known people, but random folks who have allegedly died of coronavirus. Like Eileen from Swinton, say. Or Ed from Basingstoke. Or Richie from Salford. And the presenters are speaking in somber voices. I love Kay Burley. Let's have a listen. This is Kay this morning. Very excited with herself. Kay Burley.
And from the Lake District to the pyramids, coming up in just a few moments' time, we are going to be taking you live to the pyramids for the latest in our series of Virtually There. You can't travel at the moment. So we're bringing the pyramids to you. That to come very shortly indeed. And then at 9:30...
She's doing a thing every morning where she's speaking to somebody at one of the world's wonders. Because we can't go there. So it's virtual tourism with Kay Burley. Bet you Alan Wicker is shitting himself if he's still alive. Right, anyway.
And of course, we will be seeing Ian King live. Ian,
is he still alive, Alan Wicker?
With his new show, which starts at 9:30 till 10. And then, of course, again at 1:30 till 2.
So she's very jolly. She sounds very jolly. She's delighted, right? We're off to the pyramids shortly. And we have a new show from Ian King. She's delighted. And she's reading the auto cue.
So lots of changes for you here.
And in a second, she's going to realise that she has to read out some random dead people's names.
On Sky News, the breakfast show going through until 9:30. Lucky you.
Lucky us.
May the fourth be with you.
May the fourth be with you too, Kay.
You're watching Kay Burley at breakfast. Want to tell you about what's happening as far as coronavirus is concerned, though. And sadly, the deaths continue to rise. More than 28,000 people have now contracted coronavirus and sadly passed away in hospital and also in care homes around the UK. As they say at the Daily Briefing, in other settings. But behind every single one of those numbers is a tragedy. The eldest person to have died was 108, the youngest just 5 years old.
Five.
Among them was Danny Cairns. There's Danny, look at that smile. Danny was 68 years old. He's from Greenock in Scotland. Just 3 days after contracting the virus is when Danny sadly died. He was one of the first in Scotland to die with COVID-19.
But at least there's that then. At least he was one of the first to die.
He survived by his wife, Eunice. Thoughts are with you, Eunice, and his brother, and as his brother Hugh describes him, his best friend.
Oh, his wife Eunice survives him, and his brother, who described him as his best friend. She sold him back tears, Kay.
In Maxine Fries, she was 79 years old when she died with the virus. She was a retired secretary and loved gardening. She was born and raised in Australia, but lived with her family here in Twickenham.
And she loved gardening.
In southwest London. Brian Hood. He was one of our own, a production editor at the Evening Standard, where he worked for 25 years.
25 years?
First as a sub-editor, and then on the business pages. He had been admitted to hospital for cancer treatment.
He was admitted to hospital for cancer?
But died at the age of 67 after contracting COVID-19. Our thoughts are with the families of all of them. This deadly disease that continues to claim lives. What's the Prime Minister going to do about lockdown? When will be 6 weeks today since we first went into lockdown? What's he going to do about it? Should we be wearing masks? When
should
we be able to go back to work? All those questions and more, answering some of them after the break.
Wow. Yeah. And then Kay went on the virtual tourism thing. Do you want to hear some of that for the crack? I'll go on then. Mark Bajerski joins me in about 4 minutes' time. Mark is standing by in Spain. It's warm there, I'd say. Let's do it. This virtual thing now. Because we can't go anywhere. We can't go and see the pyramids. I couldn't anyway. I couldn't afford it. But even if I could afford it, we can't go because of the lockdown. So Kay is bringing us a trip to some of the world's ancient wonders every morning on Sky by speaking to somebody live via video link from the said wonder, whichever one it happens to be. It's a thing of beauty, this.
Here on the Kay Burley Show this morning, with the lockdown in place, foreign travel obviously off the table. So we're taking you from your living room to the pyramids of Egypt in the latest edition of our Virtually There series. We've had one or two technical issues. Let's see if we can fix it. Mai Saeed is an Egyptologist and tour guide. He is in Cairo for us. Hello to you.
It's obviously a woman.
To you.
Go on, Kay.
Hello. Can you hear us? I don't think that they can. We can sort of just make out the pyramids
just
behind
it.
As you know, so many people can't travel at the moment.
It's still the best holiday I've had, Kay, for a long time.
Because of lockdown, and it doesn't look as though aviation is likely to take off again anytime soon.
So see what she did there? Aviation is unlikely to take off again anytime soon.
We were hoping to take you to the pyramids. You know what we're going to do? We're going to try that for you tomorrow instead.
Do it now!
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, you can! Hey, fantastic. Tell me what's going on there at the moment.
Well, at the moment, everybody's at home.
Yeah, indeed. So what difference is that making to life at the pyramids?
What's going on there, says Kay? Well, fuck all, Kay. They've locked down the whole country just like everybody else. So the pyramids are all by themselves at the moment.
Well, the site is actually closed, but hopefully it will be reopen again soon. And it is...
I'm not buying shares in Kay Burley's virtual tourism company anytime soon. Fucking useless. Nobody there.
It's fascinating to be very far from the site, as you see it behind me. We miss it so much, and I'm pretty sure that most of the tourists around the world can't wait to come back, as it's an everybody bucket list to be in Egypt and to see the pyramids of Giza.
I'm sure that's true. Last time I was in Cairo, I found the climate, the weather actually, to be to be very difficult because I suffer from asthma and there's quite a lot of pollution in the air, isn't there? What's it like given that everybody's in lockdown?
The Cairo Tourism Board is sitting there thinking, you fucking bastard, Burley. You're supposed to be talking the place up, not talking about the pollution.
Everybody's in lockdown at the moment, or you have left visitors.
Excuse me?
What's it like?
She's horrified that Burley started talking about pollution there and asthma.
Have fewer visitors.
Have you any visitors? Can you hear me?
Well, we don't have visitors now.
There's fucking nobody here, Kay, because of the lockdown. How many times do I have to tell you, you ginger fuckwit?
There's now, but it's very complicated around the whole world, as COVID-19 is going to change the whole culture of traveling, not only to Egypt. So the coming future is for traveling in very small, tiny groups, individuals, and the future is going to be for tourism companies who can arrange that. So people will be with all the precautions, and we have to coexist with the virus as it is around the world. So as the world is going so slow into the coexistence with the COVID-19, we should pay more attention to traveling in more small groups, to be in different destinations, open destinations, and not to be in so crowded museums and etc.
Everything's going to change.
Good to talk to you. Really appreciate you taking the time. One or two problems with the signal there, but we appreciate you persevering. Thank you, Maya. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. Who's a girl, by the way?
You're welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
Go on, Kate. Where are we going next on Kate Burley's virtual tourism program on Sky, which is supposed to be a news channel? Where are we going next, Kate?
Go and see the pyramids for some time. So
you're not going anywhere near the pyramids for some time, says Kate.
So next week, we're going to take you to Las Vegas. Yeah, baby.
We're off to Las Vegas next week. Vaudeville. This is Bruce Springsteen with Viva Las Vegas on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Right, yeah. I didn't have the Elvis Presley version handy, of course, nor did I have the ZZ Top version handy. Otherwise, I might have chosen one of them and not subjected you to the Boss, whom I worship, of course. I worship the Boss. The Boss. But that was the only one I had to hand. I've been trying Mark. He did check in with me around about 5-6 minutes ago. I've been trying him, but no joy as of yet. We'll give him time because we have loads of time. We have loads of time. Time and no pressure. Do you have a crush on Kay Burley, Richie? I am being asked. Well, of course I do. Of course I do. The thinking man's bit of crumpet. Kay Burley. Kay is as mad as a box of frogs. But functioning mad. You meet people like that. They're not eccentric. They're somewhere between eccentric and the padded room with the straitjacket. That's where Kay lies. She's not padded room, straitjacket mad. Not yet. She's also not eccentric. She's halfway between the two. And it's marvellous television. Who's in charge? Is anybody's guess, really, you know? Is the editor in charge? Is there a producer in charge calling the shots? Who knows? I don't know. Now, you can tweet the programme. Obviously, it's at Richie Allen on Twitter. I don't know what to say about my guest today, except that I love the man. He's one of the most kind and caring and compassionate people I've ever met. And I don't say that lightly. I really don't. You know him, of course, because of the work that he does with his Healing Academy, the Pure Energy Healing Academy, which he set up. And I've known people independently before I knew Mark, who'd gone to visit him at the academy. And they were telling me great things about him and his decency and his humanity. So I've got to find out more about him. And then I got in touch with him and he was kind enough to send me his book, The Accidental Psychic. That's the one. I'm thinking off the top of my head now. That's right, which is an excellent read. And we got to know one another. He came on the programme and from a distance I was watching him anyway. He's brilliant. He's a speaker, author, spiritual teacher and the founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. Let's welcome back to the programme my friend and yours, Mark Bajerski. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Oh, brilliant, Richard. Thank you so much for having me back on. I'm a bit nervous, but butterflies every time I come on your show, but feel great. Thanks.
Don't be saying that. First thing I want to do is thank you, even though he's thanked you, because he's another great human being. Thanks for jumping in when the trigger warning boys, who I have a lot of time for and a lot of affection for, when the building that they operate from is broken into for the second time and their equipment was stolen, you jumped in and helped raise a significant amount of money for them. And I know this to be true. We live in a cynical world where people are always looking for ulterior motives. And I know this because I'm a cynic and I'm always looking for ulterior motives. But I've learned about you and just one or two others. There's never any other motive. So they've thanked you profusely. I know they have. But I want to thank you because that's the sort of thing that, well, it gives me a boost, that when I see people doing things for other people with nothing in it for them. So thanks a million.
Oh, you're most welcome, Richard. I enjoy it. I mean, I don't know what I'd do without the empathy to be able to give and share. The world for me would be a miserable place. So it keeps me strong. It makes me feel good. It gives me that understanding of why I'm here. And I was like that as a boy. I never understood how somebody who had a bag of sweets never gave somebody else a sweet. And yeah. It used to break my heart, but it never stopped me from believing or continuing the journey of loving and taking care of my brother and sister, who is everybody in the world. And I don't believe in hate. I don't hate anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. People do bad things and people do good things, and we forgive. And that's the most powerful thing in the world right now, because there's not enough forgiveness. And everybody's judging at the moment. Everybody's pointing fingers. Everybody's looking for a leader. Everybody's looking for somebody that they can, a guru, a messiah, whatever you want to call them. And people are really at the point where they now are recognizing, Richie, that won't help them anymore, because the gurus let you down, the preachers let you down, the leaders let you down, government lets you down. You realize that the only person who can ever help you is yourself. And I think we're now awakening to that fact, that the guru lies within you, and the only person you should ever bow to is your mirror. And I think the world is awakening.
That's a really fascinating opening gambit, for want of a better way of putting it. I really like this idea. I also think it's a bit scary for people. I think when we first talked, you and I, we talked and you spoke beautifully about how hard it is for people to come to terms with the initial stages of realizing that something is very wrong with the world around them, and that a lot of what they've been brought up to believe is untrue. You and I talked about that. And we talked about how scary that is. So people seek out, I suppose sometimes they seek out others who are beginning to see the world like them as well. But they also seek out, you know, you mentioned gurus and prophets and what have you. And that's comforting for a while. And some of these gurus and prophets, I mean, I'd be very critical of them, and I have been over the years. But some of them, they're doing their best, and some of them mean well. Even if they don't do well, they mean well. So this is a fascinating juncture now. Now people are starting to realise, because of what's happening now, which we can talk about in a second, the most profound thing that has happened to us, at least in my lifetime. Now they're beginning to realise that, well, my guru, the person I thought was my teacher, is not the answer. That's scary, that, Mark. That's scary then, that idea then, well, I'm on my own here. I'm on my own, you know?
Well, one of the things that I learned, a really valuable lesson, was from my first mentor. And I received, after maybe 3 years of real hard work, I received three certificates from her. And she had a PhD. She was one of the most famous psychics in the world, who worked for the FBI. So she taught me a lot. And then she said, I want to give you these certificates. The certificates went on my wall and I started to do the work. People from all over the world started coming, Hollywood stars, you name it, everybody was coming at that point. My teacher was starting to get very upset because the pupil was outgrowing the teacher. And then it became really, really evident that the teacher wasn't really teaching for the sake of love and compassion and growth and wisdom, but the teacher wanted something from the pupil. And many of these teachers want something. So it wasn't really a gift of sharing truth, but it was more of a business transaction. So the day I realized that, I said, I just need some time alone. I pulled away, and then I was attacked really bad for 3 years. A lot of people heard about it and knew about it. And I cried most days. We were, as a family, in pain and suffering. I got down on my knees and I was crying, and I said, why is this happening to me? I'd never hurt anybody. Why is this happening? And when I was on my knees, I got a great, valuable piece of information. It was called awakening. As I walked down my stairs, the three pictures on the wall, which was of my certificates of merit. I took them off the wall and teared them up and threw them away, not out of anger, but I realized that my limit of my power was only to the degree of my teacher. When I threw them away and said, I no longer recognize power or anybody else's power, I got my own power back, and I never flew as high in my life. Everything started to take shape. People, even more so, I grew in my inner strength. Therefore, now at the Pure Energy Healing Academy, everybody will tell you this. When I give them a certificate, I say to them, the day you become the most powerful healer is the day you take the certificate and throw it in the bin.
Mark, you've got a new book out, and I want to talk about that later on. I also want to point out that I asked Mark to come on the programme before I knew that he had a book about to come out, and he very kindly sent me a copy of it. I want to talk about that a bit later on. Questions are flying in from people. Mark's website is markbajerski.com. They're really lovely, really interesting questions as well. Do you know whenever I say, because you've got such a big following, your YouTube channel has got hundreds of thousands of followers, and people watch your inspirational messages there on a daily basis. I creased up laughing at your video the day before yesterday when you were talking about the madness going on outside your window when the lockdown ended. It made me proper laugh, that belly laughs. We'll talk about that in a second. But so I always announce you come on, and then I get a few emails, I get a few tweets, I get lots. And people said to me, Richie, ask him, does he feel that we're coming to the end of something? You see, people are scared. Their rights are being taken away by their government, primarily their government, which is given the authority to local authorities and to the police, you know, to tell people they can't go outside. And people are very worried. They're very scared. You talked about this earlier on. And some of them, especially spiritual people, I'm on my way to becoming a spiritual person, maybe. I start to wonder, I don't mean, is this the end times, like biblical Armageddon, but are we reaching the conclusion of something? People want to know.
Well, many people have been discussing this moment for quite a while. And it's really interesting because what I saw around 18 months ago was a shift. And I came on your show and said the scales had tipped slightly to the degree that darkness is no longer the upper hand. What I meant by that was more people were becoming aware and awake. Something started to change. So prior to that, for the 14 years that I was doing this work, most people were coming on a one-to-one level, wanting to fix their issue with their partnership, maybe sort a business out, maybe wanting to find their inner self and wanting to know what was going on and who I am. So it was more of a personal thing with most people and their kind of like daily life, nothing more than that. Maybe 10% of people really wanted to go deeper and wanted to understand what the bigger picture was. So the percentage was, say, 90% of you and I who wake up in the morning, have our breakfast, do our work and come home and hopefully pay the mortgage that month and have a holiday. That was it, really. That was the bottom line. I dealt with a lot of people who were multi-billionaires, millionaires, and so on. So it was a wide selection of people, but those people always kind of had the same issues. Tell me about love. Tell me, am I going to meet somebody? Tell me, is my future going to be okay? So it was kind of me, which was fine because that's basically the start. So what I noticed then over these past, I'd say 18, 16, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, okay, people started to ask different questions. People started to become more aware, and people were then saying, what's happening. And I am sat down saying, what do you mean what's happening? What's happening to the world? There's something going wrong. I'm not feeling well. I feel it's dark. And like this new energy, these new people were like normal folk were saying this. So the awakening started well over a year ago. And that's why I said to you, Richard, I can feel a change. Something is happening, something mega, something really powerful. So the more I meditated on this, the more I realized that, yeah, there is a shift and it's an alignment, which I believe is to do with the earth and the stars. That is probably what it is. But that alignment brings forward a new energy, and that energy is called, well, we call it high vibration, which opens people up to a new understanding. It makes you think more. It makes you feel more. It makes you step back and look at more about life. So if I'm right, a lot of people right now are feeling new feelings. They're thinking more. They're feeling more. They're trying to come up with explanations. And then feelings are not only positive, but can be very, very negative and very fearful. That's the part of the awakening. That's what you need to get over. I went through that. So it's a horrible feeling to feel this new awakening, because all of a sudden your life has changed. It's no longer what it is. And most people, Richie, don't like change, whether they believe that or not. They want to be comfortable. They want to know that the world turns, the sun, you know, goes up and goes down, the moon comes out. But when things start to become different, when we're challenged and we're seeing these challenges that we've never seen before, like, hang on a minute, one of the things that we're challenged with now is, you know, I have this saying now, it's to do with politics. And I don't really talk about politics, but most people are worried about the world and why it is. And we've been conditioned to think that only the politicians can bring a solution to these problems. But the world is awakening now, Richard, because at some point now we're waking up and we're saying maybe it's the politicians and the system that's creating these problems. Whereas at one time, all we ever did was we believed in the programming that actually we were told that our system, our governments love us and care for us and protect us. But actually we're standing back and saying, well, hang on a minute. Why are people being forced into a house? Why are people being fined? Why is government doing what they're doing? Why are grandmothers not being able to connect to their family? Why can we not hug people? And we're realizing that there's something a little bit more sinister going on. And now the world is awakening. And here's the beautiful thing, Richard. And this is what really, really makes me happy. I believe in my fellow brother and sister. And a lot of people have given up hope on their brothers and sisters, people. They believe that we're all separate. We all hate each other. We all judge each other. We all point fingers. We're all separate. We all have our, but forget all of that. The truth is that this new energy that's being created now, this vibration, it's not only making people see what they never saw before, but it's actually bringing courage into people. And that's why I said to you, the tables are tilted, you know, the scales have tilted. Now you're going to see more people standing up saying, actually, this isn't what I've been told, isn't it? I believe it's something else. Therefore, what I said to you makes sense now. We are now becoming our own teacher. We're now becoming our own guru. We're standing up and having a voice, whereas we never had that before. There was only 5% of people who dare stand up to the pulpit and be mocked and ridiculed. But now we're seeing on social media more people standing up saying, hey, this is BS. This is not right. And that's why I'm saying that this is a beautiful time. And when you're down on your knees, Richard, when you're in a house and you're locked in that house, it's the same thing. You're down on your knees. And what happens when you're on your knees, Richard? There's only one thing that can happen. You get up. You get up. And I believe that the world is getting up off their knees right now, and it's scaring the hell out of the fear and the darkness that I have been working to clear in this world. So never forget, never forget. Through darkness comes light. From light comes darkness, from darkness comes light. And that's the way it will always be. And now we're in the energy of light.
It's interesting that you think the darkness, the agenda has revealed. It sounds like you think it's revealed a little bit too much of itself. The mask has slipped a bit too much. That's an interesting perspective. I'm not sure I entirely get that, but I'm prepared to consider it because it's you saying it. Mark Bajerski is our guest. It's markbajerski.com. Thrilled to have him back on the programme. Lots of really interesting questions coming in on Twitter, so I better get to a few of them then while we have Mark. Mark is with me until the end of the programme today, which is fantastic. Let me scroll on down, Mark. Let's see. There's a very good question came in earlier on. And do you know what I should have done? I should have copied and pasted it. But I'll come back to, I've got another one handy. Yeah, this is when you don't have a producer, you see.
Okay. No, it's perfect. Richard, I did want to talk to you about one thing that I felt was really important right now that people need to understand about what's going on at this moment on the level of manipulation, if I'm allowed to.
Of course you're allowed to. We're going right till the top of the next hour. Of course you can. We'll do that then, and let's make time for some of these questions as well. I'll have to take the grief later on if I don't ask you the questions. They're good questions too. But no, go ahead, of course. That's why you're here, Mark. Go ahead, mate.
Okay, so first of all, we grasp that there may be something wrong with the system, that how it works and who may be manipulating it. Whether we believe it or not, we know there's something wrong. So a great foundation is that, you know what, if the government doesn't prove to me that they are good and kind and caring, then I'm not going to believe that they are. That's a great foundation. Second thing is what's going on with in the world of spirituality. I've come to understand that there is a very, very powerful force that is being used. And that force is within the dark arts. And I've mentioned this to you before, but it's really relevant now and it should make sense more now than ever. For many years, I've had people come to me who believed that they had curses, voodoo, black magic, all the dark arts attached to them. And when sat with them and worked with them and helped and healed them, I came to a conclusion after 10 years of working in this field of people being attacked in the dark arts, was the man who or woman who is creating this dark art or voodoo will take money off somebody, just say that a woman is very angry or a man's angry at somebody else, and he pays the witch doctor or whatever you want to call them an X amount of money to cause great harm and suffering to somebody who they feel they've had this issue with. What this man does is then show the person that he's received the money from a certain tactic, and it's very clever, and it's a manipulation. So he will do a kind of ritual, but he knows that this will only work if he gets the message across to the victim, which means it would be a case of lots of letters with messages saying that you have black magic attached to you now. The other one is some horrible things like animals being killed and put on the front doorstep and so on. The person who is now the victim opens the door and maybe sees a chicken with its head off, or a rat with a tail in its mouth. These are one of the things, or a big hat with a feather in. There's many different forms of showing you that you have now got black magic, voodoo, and a curse attached to you. That person then will see it and then go into a very, very deep and suffering moment. Then they come to me and say, everything has gone wrong, Mark. My life is a mess. I'm having accidents, things. I don't know what to do. And I sit them down and ask them, when did you start to suffer? And they would say to me, Saturday. And I say, so it started on Saturday. Yes. When did you find out you had the curse or voodoo attached to you? Oh, on Friday night. Okay, so prior to that, you were fine, yes. So I found there was a common pattern that the voodoo or the man knows that the strength and the power only happens when you show them this offering of dark ritual. Where I'm coming to with this is really important that we need to know. At this moment, there is the same thing happening, and it is through the mainstream media, and it is black magic, it is voodoo, it is dark arts, and it is pumped through the TV screen every single moment in the image of fear, fear, fear. Let that sit inside you for a moment and just ponder on it, Richie.
You're absolutely 100% right. And nobody has articulated that better than you. It's modern day technological voodoo, isn't it? You've described it brilliantly. And it is terrifying the living bejesus out of people. It really is. And again, I'm thinking back to a conversation I had last week with a neighbour about his child and how scared she is. And, you know, I said, I suppose, what most people would say, which is, well, don't have it turned on then. You know, don't have it on. It's ironic, a psychiatrist was on Sky News last week. He won't be asked back. And he said he was asked to talk about people's mental health during the COVID lockdown, Mark. And he said, well, the first thing you should do is turn the news off. The Sky News presenter nearly died, of course, when he said this. But that's amazingly put. And it's having this effect on people. If they weren't absorbing this and watching it, they wouldn't suffer from it. It's that simple.
Well, this is the whole point of this beginning of the awakening. People are wanting to know what they can do to heal from the fear. So the second part of this conversation we're having is, now that you recognize you are being voodooed, right, then you're being tricked. If you're being tricked, why would you watch something or even put energy and focus and attention on that when you know it's all a lie and it's a trick? Once you grasp that, then you do not put any focus on it. Now, the thing is, Richie, for 4 weeks now, I had a choice, which we all have. It's called free will. That choice is to watch TV and listen to the fear all day long, or to continue my life and do what I do best, or what makes me happy, yeah, or what brings me joy. So I decided to continue doing what I would normally do and totally disregard all of the voodoo that is being put to me. I have never felt happier and stronger in my life. Has it made any difference to people's lives? Well, yes, it has. It's made a lot of difference, because I have been doing things on a positive level that has made me stronger, that has made other people stronger, and that has strengthened my immune system. So even if there is no such thing as coronavirus, even if there is a coronavirus, then I am at a win-win situation, because coronavirus will only attack weak immune system. Therefore, there's only one answer to a positive and healthy outcome. Eat healthy fruit and vegetables, eat beautiful and natural roots, ginger, all of these things that the voodoo doesn't want you to do. It doesn't want you to know these things. It doesn't want you to work on natural, healthy living. So when you look after yourself and when you take the voodoo away and the fear away, your mind becomes stronger, your heart becomes stronger, and it's a win-win situation. So food, spirituality, clearing the fear is the answer to getting through this. And then looking back and saying, you know what? I did really well on that point of my life, from the day that we were told there was a virus to the day it suddenly disappeared.
Be honest now with your answer. Be very honest as you as you want to be.
Yeah.
Somebody like me then, who discusses what is being discussed, shall we say. So when I take this stuff on, but I rebroadcast it, in doing what I do, I rebroadcast this stuff. Am I feeding it, do you think?
Well, that's an amazing question. And the reason why I say it's amazing is because you already know the answer. I know you know the answer, but what are you feeding? That's the wonderful thing. What are you feeding? Are you feeding people from listening to your take on a different perception, a different experience? Or are you feeding negativity because you're in that negativity, you're pointing out the negativity? Be honest with me now, Richie. Would I be right in saying that from the first moment I met you till now, that you've been doing an amazing amount of work looking at this darkness and trying to expose it in all the ways? Would you say, on your hand and your heart, that this energy sometimes takes its toll on your energy, therefore your immune system gets down and you feel sometimes a little bit run down, that you need a break?
Oh, undoubtedly. But before you come back in, undoubtedly, here's what I think. I think by lampooning it sometimes and ridiculing it, I think that sometimes I succeed in kind of undressing it and revealing it through laughter sometimes. But okay. other times, yeah, it is. It's not, I mean, spending your days looking at, I mean, that's what the show is, because I'm a journalist. And the show is basically saying, look, we are surrounded by this media. The show is, I'm speaking like a child now. The theme of the show, at least the early 20, 25 minutes of the programme, is to say, look at this garbage here. And try and reveal it for what it is. And sometimes, a lot of times through laughing at it, but other times, it's negative. What it does to me is, I know for sure that looking at it on a daily basis and spending my time around it, it does have an impact on me. There's no two ways about it, because it is, I mean, you described it perfectly. It's a curse. It's black magic. It's a voodoo. I mean, it doesn't work on me because I know what it is, but maybe it does in another way. I don't know.
Well, this is my feeling right now. Because the world is awakening, we are able to see more and connect more to another realm of universe. I call it the spirit world, but it doesn't matter whether you believe that or not. Let's say it's just a thought that you had, a great thought that may help the situation that we're in. So my point being is this, Richard. A lot of the times when we go down into the darkness, it's very hard to see the light within that darkness. So I refer to, just say for you, you point out certain things, but it's frustrating because you don't have the answer. Absolutely. Because the answer is hard to find and see. Would that be right in saying?
It is and it isn't. This is a really good conversation to be having right now, I think. It is and it isn't. I agree with you. But on another level, I think whether I understand the answer or whether I have the answer or not is debatable. I'll tell you what my answer has always been. Mm-hmm. To the physical. Now, we're talking spiritual and we're talking physical. To deal with the tyrants that have created the paradigm that we live in, this horrible, fearful... You described it amazingly well a few minutes ago. It's brilliant. I'm going to use it. I'm going to be stealing from you. It's a curse. It's black magic. It's voodoo. I see the way to deal with it, and I don't know if we'll ever get to the place where we can, where we have enough people, is basically non-violence. I don't believe in violence. I don't believe in ugliness and violence. Is basically civil disobedience. Is basically right. Enough people coming together and saying, you know what, we're going to turn our backs on this. They can go and sing for their council tax money, they can go and sing for this. We're not going to cooperate. Over to you. So I agree with you on the one hand. On the other hand, that's always been my solution.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I believe that somebody has to stand up, and that somebody is you, and that somebody is me, and that's every single person listening right now. And that's what's called community. It's called a bond. It's called coming together for the bigger reason. What's happening right now is there's a massive awakening of souls, but also at the same time you've got this spaghetti junction of people with ego, people with their belief system, yeah. with their religious beliefs, with their really, really hardened political views. And all of these people are fighting for the silly little things. Whereas if we can drop all of that down and come together for one reason and one reason only, that's, I believe, how we can change the world. Yeah. But we have to get over this bickering and fighting. So I don't like you because you're doing this. Yeah, I don't like you because you're causing a problem and you're stirring and you're making it worse. We have to drop all of that, Richard, and we have to come together for one single reason. If we can all agree on one single reason and drop the rest, a bit like a mountain, you've got the tip of the mountain that we all believe in love and we all believe in healing and we all believe in equality. We all believe that we need to have a good life free from all the things that have been taken away from us. If we can come together just for that reason, instead of arguing why these things are happening, I think we can change the world within one single day.
But you show the way, though. You show the way by doing the things that you do for people. Let me tell you a story. It's a totally true story, this. About 3 weeks ago, I was at a local supermarket, and after I'd gotten my groceries, I realised that I needed some cash for to pick up some dry cleaning. It's a lovely dry cleaning place around the corner from where I live. So I went to the cash machine, and there was three or four people ahead of me, and I saw that something was happening at the cash point. And there was a gentleman, and he was crying. He was overcome, and I was disturbed. I mean, nobody likes to see anybody upset or crying, but it turned out to be a very nice story. He was crying because he was at the cash point with his son. And he went to take some money out, and there was nothing there. The guy's lost his job. He was 0 hours contract and lost his job and had nothing and was expecting some money to be in his account, and he had nothing. Would you believe it? The guy standing behind him asked him, "Why are you crying?" And he told him, and the guy took 100 quid out of the machine and he gave it to him and gave him a hug. Right? That's how you change the world.
I've been trying to
little things like that, right? Yeah, little things. That's how you do it, by caring enough. I mean, even if it's somebody across, that's a totally true story. That now, I hand on heart, I'd have given the chap the money, and I'm damn sure. I'm not trying to give myself flowers or pat myself on the back. I think most people in the queue would have given the chap the money.
Exactly. That's my whole point.
This is you, but you do this. You do it all the time. But
that's right. My whole point, that the voodoo that we're being given is to tell us that we wouldn't. It's telling us that we have to live in fear, that nobody cares. But actually, if you chuck that away, if you chuck that voodoo away, you realize that people are genuinely beautiful, kind and caring, and it's only a small minority of people who are in a bad place in their mind because of the fear of the voodoo that they will not do anything. But that's only very few. If you are on the floor, Richard, and you say, please, I mean, there are people on the floor all over the world needing help. And if you just sit and watch, you will see that people are always giving. Always giving, always giving. And that's the truth. And people will be arguing with me now, saying that's not true, that's not true. But it is. If you see somebody trapped underneath a car, you would see every single person on that street run over and lift them up, because it's natural. We are all natural healers, all of us.
And this voodoo black magic crap that pours out of our television screens, and it even pours out of our cinemas, because I believe, and I've come to this conclusion through listening to you over the years, and you might know this, but I watch your YouTube videos, and when you do an occasional interview with somebody else, I always listen to it, because it gives me joy, to be honest. I get great energy out of it. I get great happiness and motivation out of it. I've been thinking about what you've been saying, and I believe that a lot of the television drama, let's leave the news aside for 1 minute, but even a lot of cinema is voodoo and black magic and is pushing us down. You know, a lot of the films are dreadful and full of nasty violence, and I mean, some of the latest TV shows, there's a gangster show on Sky One at the moment, which they spent a fortune on. The violence in it, Mark. I'm beginning to sound a bit like Mary Whitehouse. I think I understand Mary Whitehouse now, as I get older. It's horrible stuff.
It is. And the thing is, Richie, when you think about it, right, every single newspaper, every single hit movie has violence in and anger, but only at the very end there might be a little bit of happiness. And it's for me, it's a deliberate voodoo manipulation to make people live in fear. And that's why you will never, ever see on mainstream media above 1% of a loving story that somebody's done out of their kindness of their heart, because it will kill the fear that is being pumped. We can change people's perceptions by getting rid of that TV and spending time watching beautiful things, listening to great music, meditating, and just being out in nature. That changes the chip. And that is really, really frightening to the darkness and the system. They don't want that. They want you to live on your phone. They want you to live in that voodoo energy.
And you've turned your back on it, which is an amazing thing, because I spoke to a gentleman many years ago on when I was living around the corner from you, actually, when I was based in San Pedro. I spoke to a gentleman on the phone from California. His name escapes me now, but I'm going to invite him back on, even though he was very senior. He'd had experience with demons. He was a beautiful soul as well, lovely gentleman. And he said that ultimately he was able to help one or two people over the years basically turn their back on that darkness, because by engaging with it, and I think you've just described it anyway, by engaging with it, by spending your time on your phone in front of your television, you're giving it its power.
But
you're feeding it. If you turn your back on it and say, no, I've had enough now, it doesn't.
And that's free will. That's free will. And that's what I'm saying. The awakening is beginning. People, I mean, this past 4 weeks, I don't want to go into great detail, but part of my understanding is that a lot of children and teenagers are going through great depression right now. I'm working on sending crystals and giving them help as much as I can. So my work is understanding that this darkness is really, really stepping up its energy, but so too is the light. So too is the energy of love and kindness, because whenever in darkness, you will see beautiful lights starting to shine even brighter. So my philosophy now is that many souls are reawakening their soul, which was suppressed by this voodoo energy. So we are now reawaking our flames. That's why there's a massive push now, and you will see this voodoo being pushed 24/7, because they know that there is a shift in energy right now in this universe, in this cosmos, on this planet, that is awakening people every single day. I have friends coming back to me after 16 years who called me terrible things and now saying, I'm really sorry, Mark, I didn't see it. And I'm saying, hey, don't be sorry, yeah, come and give us a cuddle. Yeah. And now I'm seeing it every single moment. So I'm telling you that the light is becoming brighter every day. And the only way you think it's going to, it's the opposite, is if you're listening to the crap that's being pumped out every day. So that is your go-to, to your belief that the world is a dark place, when actually fact, it's not. It's filled with love and compassion and amazing people. But the darkness has this amazing addiction for people to want to live in fear. But that's changing now. People are sick of it. They're on their knees and they're getting up and saying no more. I promise you, Richie, you will see more people standing up saying enough is enough. And they're calling the darkness out. Every day from now on, you will see more and more. But what we need to do is not fight each other or call each other. Let everybody experience the way they know. Yeah. Let them be, and you keep doing what you're doing. And eventually, we will come to a point of the beautiful mountain that I talk about at the tip, that we all come together for the higher reason. The more, I call it the the divine point, and I think we're nearly there. So I'm really excited, and I know we've got the help from a different dimension, not extraterrestrial, but our spirit world, which work alongside us. And let me tell you, my dear friend, there's a lot of work being doing when we're asleep at this moment, but that's another story.
No doubt. We will talk to Mark about his book real soon. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Beautiful Salford this afternoon. The Riviera in the northwest here, we say. Mark Bajerski is our guest. MarkBajerski.com is the website. There's only one Mark Bajerski in so many ways. If you put that name into YouTube, you'll find his YouTube channel. I don't want to get into this at all. It's not for you because you don't do negativity. On the whole thing about squabbling and stuff, I have to say this. When you see, as a journalist, when you see somebody claiming to be elevating free speech and helping content creators, and what they're really doing is selling get-rich-quick courses and Bitcoin and asking people to consider releasing the equity in their homes, you have a duty to call it out as a journalist. And I will never stop doing that. Now, you know what I'm talking about. We're not getting into it here. And I'm not getting into it. To be honest with you, I'm not getting into it ever again. I've said me piece in the last few days. I have a duty to call it out. I think I'm nobody special. I'm not important. But at least if I say it, I'll have gotten it off my chest. And my listeners can either come back to me and say, ah, you bastard, Alan, bitching about this guy. He's trying to do some good. Or they can say, well, maybe Richie's got a point. But I just wanted to make that point. I agree with you about squabbling and stuff. I've always been an independent content creator. I have no interest, ordinarily, in what anybody else is doing in the so-called truth movement. None whatsoever. I stay out of it. But every now and then you see somebody that's telling people some whoppers of lies. And if it means that people might lose some of their money, I feel compelled to say something about it. But I hear you, my friend. Now, I want to... Mark is with me till the top of the hour. And this has been a beautiful conversation. I'm so glad you came on tonight. I want to read a couple of questions, really important questions that have come in. Mad Monk says, this is really good, Mark, because I felt that one of the things the agenda has been doing, whatever it is it's been trying to disconnect us from our elders, from our seniors.
Absolutely.
So here's the question from Mad Monk. Mark, are we waking up to want real leaders, kind of like elders that used to be in tribes, elders that have wisdom and truth, elders that walk the walk, not talk the talk, elders that guide, not dictate? Now, that's a broader question than what I said, but I really do believe there's an agenda to make us dismiss, to disconnect from, and almost, I would say, to despise our elders who have lived life, have experienced it. What do you think?
Well, you only need to look at history, right? And one of the things that I found fascinating the other day, and it breaks my heart, but you have to laugh. These beautiful souls that knew the land, Mother Earth, these great, wise, beautiful people all over the world, take, for instance, America, the Native Americans. Now, think about what the system has done to hijack them in so many ways and manipulate everything. Now, ask yourself this question. The American helicopters, which are military, what do they call them? Think of some of the names.
Of the helicopters?
Yeah.
The first one that comes to mind is the Apache is one that comes to mind straight away, the Apache, right?
Exactly. Think about it. Think of some more.
I can't think of... I'm not great with military hardware now, Mr. Bajerski. Well, you give me a few.
They hijack all the beautiful words. So, tomahawk.
There's tomahawk, so, yeah.
There's so many of them. The elders that were wise and they knew the land, they knew... they were fortune tellers, they were psychics, whatever you want to call them. They were in tune with the earth and what was happening with the stars. These people have been killed. the beautiful women of the world thereafter, the healers, the ones who are, which were then named and killed as witches, you know. We can go on over history and see that these people have been killed for a reason. They've been shut up for a reason, because they don't, the darkness does not want light to shine. In a sense, there is a fine line between those people that I believe in and I hear, but I am also very aware that what is said by certain so-called gurus or the elders, we have to listen. Ultimately, yeah, we have to listen. The problem is, when you're searching for those elders again, you still have to listen to your gut instinct. Now, for me, a red flag is very, very simple. The red flag for me when somebody speaks as a guru is what they're saying. If the guru is asking you to take responsibility and listen to your higher self and listen to your inner truth, then that is compelling for me to say that this guru or this elder knows. So what he shares is information, but only information. From there, he makes you go away and think about it and will not punish you if you believe that what he said didn't resonate with you. He will actually commend you and say, well done for listening to yourself. Now go follow your truth. The darkness doesn't want you to do that. The darkness wants you to go to school, to listen, to be told what to think and what not to do. Do not walk out of that room unless you lift your hand up to go to the toilet. You have to obey.
Yeah.
You see, an elder would never tell you to obey and do something. The elder will ask you, what do you feel is the right thing to do? And ultimately, like I know this, doesn't matter who I sit with, all I need to do is, well, what do you think? And they always have the answer. And the problem is to unlearn people who have been brainwashed. Not their fault, not my fault. I have faults, but that was because of the school brainwashing. You unlearn people to help them listen to their own gut instinct. And that is the answer to healing mankind.
Funny, in the last couple of days, the people responsible for education in this country, Ofsted, they're desperate to get the youngsters back into primary school. Desperate.
Yeah, because you've seen what's happening right now with youngsters. Mm. They're all waking up. I'm hearing so many things. You know, I said I wouldn't talk about this, but you know what? I'd really like to. My son was brought up by a very, very wealthy man, very wealthy, and he had a helicopter in his garden. So my son ended up having two fathers and flying all over the world, had a great life. As he got older, he wanted to become a millionaire. The other day, he sent me a message and said, Dad, I'm reevaluating my life. Do you know what? I think I want not to be a millionaire anymore. I want to enjoy my life with my family and spend more time with my family. Now, if that isn't powerful right now, what is? You know,
This is Nico, of course, your yeah, son, whom you love as you do China, of course, and Susie, your ex-wife. Amazing kid. Yeah, I met him. He's not a kid. I met him in Manchester when you came over to see David at the Apollo. And that's absolutely heartfelt. Somehow he was chasing. I mean, we all did. I've done it. I've chased. No. I used to think, you know, big house, big car. I used to think all of that. Money, yeah, but not anymore. And he's reached that juncture where he says, no way, my family, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful,
exactly,
isn't it?
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, I was crying. I literally crying, thinking, what an old soul. And actually, what we've all forgot is that it is our children that can teach us, and yet we suppress them and tell them what they have to think and feel. Isn't that
amazing? Funny you mentioned the schools. I went to St. Saviour's Primary School in Ballybeg in Waterford City. And it was a nice school. It was a brand new building, loads of glass in it, loads of light coming in from the outside. It had telephones. Inside the classrooms. This is 1979 now. And yeah, but it was regimented. We had a horrible grey uniform and we had to ask permission to go to the toilet. Oscuelga, in the Irish language, we used to have to say, on Will Ciadagum Dolgadi on Leheris, which is the Gaelic the Gaeilge, for can I go to the loo? And I remember, wait for this, Mark. I remember I was in second form, we say second standard, and for the first time ever, we had a relief teacher because our normal teacher was sick. And the relief teacher was Mrs. Harris. And she was this beautiful senior lady. I think she was in her mid-70s at the time, retired for years. And she was doing a bit of temping. Beautiful old lady. She had her glasses. She used to spin her glasses on her fingers. That was her affectation. And the first time somebody asked her to go to the toilet in her classroom, she was aghast. She said, "Child, I can't believe that you have to ask permission to go to the toilet. If anybody needs to go to the toilet, just go to the toilet," she said.
Exactly.
Madness. But yeah.
Exactly. That single point you've just made emphasizes everything to what I'm saying, that this voodoo is totally in control.
Mark Bajarski is our guest. It's 6:30, by the way. It's Monday's programme, May 4th, which is a big day for Star Wars fans. So May the 4th be with you. Is it a Before we talk about your book, Mark, I'm really keen to talk about it. Before we do, was George Lucas onto something about energy in the Force? Was he?
No, absolutely. Without a doubt. That was what was so profound about that. Because when you watch it and you saw Luke Skywalker with a blindfold on, working to stop this ray of beam hit him, and he was feeling that Force. You could feel it. All children felt it, because it's the truth, and that truth has been suppressed. And we have, ultimately, every child in this world has been suppressed of that energy. And when people come here to learn healing, they realize, my God, I've just seen that, or I've just felt that. Yeah. I say, yeah, that's normal. Outside isn't normal, because you've been suppressed of this gift and this power to move mountains. And I literally mean that. We have the power to do more amazing things than we can imagine.
And I want to go back to something you talked about earlier on, and you know, your deeds as opposed to your words, your deeds. I really do believe that people, of course, because of the black magic, the dark arts of the television, people have been conditioned to think that they can't really do anything. But if you do something as simple as invite a neighbour around for a cup of tea, have a drink with a neighbour, go to your local park and get involved in picking up litter and cleaning the park. These are the things that are huge energy shifts. I used to think this was madness, of course. And I know you know this. You're very humble. You know that I, at one time, would have thought you were as mad as a box of frogs, Bajarski. That's what I would have said. I would have said, listen, guy's lovely. He's lovely and all that. But this is all fairy. You know, it's all for the fairies. But it isn't, of course. That can create a massive shift in energy, can't it? Something as simple as that.
It can, and it's so fascinating, Richie, because there was a book written, and in that book it mentions the power of giving. And it's really interesting, because one of the ladies was speaking about corporations, and she said that, you see, corporations know that when you gift 10% of your wealth, you will receive so much more. And I thought that was so sinister, because it's not about what you get back from it, and you never get back from it. It's a business transaction then, so it never works. True giving is a gift which has no value on at all. I don't value the gift other than giving it you out of love, and you don't want anything in return. You don't care about how that person tells you it's wonderful. You just gift because you know it feels right and it's the right thing to do. Now, that is what giving is. That's the real power behind giving, and that really generates such a powerful energy that by doing that, by really going into your truth and saying, you know what, I don't fear giving, because everything that I own is only borrowed for the time that I'm here. So share. When you share and give, it is an amazing energy that transforms you to become a light which vibrates at 12. There's 12 levels I see. You can vibrate at 12 levels. Those people who vibrate at 12 levels are the ones who are unconditional love, which means that they don't hate, they don't despise, they don't want anything. They just vibrate at that energy because they love everything and everybody. It sounds crazy, but let me tell you, those people that I've met, and there are people out there, they always seem to have an amazing life, even though they never wanted or asked for it. It's like that the universe knows when you are truly kind and caring, and it always looks after you. So you are always taken care of if you clear the fear and just trust and do what your heart says. And that's what I've done all my life. And I've always been protected and loved, always. So I believe in that. If there's one message we could give the world, that should be the start of your awakening, is to open your heart and give freely and help your brother and sister.
Now, that's a beautiful message. And Lemon House has published your latest book. It's called Seeing the Invisible: True Stories of Mysteries and Enlightenment, and the beautiful cover on the book. It's absolutely gorgeous. Seeing the Invisible: True Stories of Mysteries and Enlightenment. Tell us about it. What was the inspiration behind it?
Well, the inspiration behind that book was the day that I was in Bali doing a retreat. And I was really struggling with my life because I knew that I couldn't continue doing the work that I was doing for the amount of hours. And it takes a lot of energy to heal. It takes a lot of effort to keep on that energy level to be able to be 100% a healer and a guide. So I'm like now nearly 50 years old, and I'm working at this retreat with 23 or so people, one-to-one sessions. And I realized that I just can't do this kind of work anymore. One to one, it's just very, very challenging if you're not 100%. And I knew that I needed to move forward in my life. I felt I'd done enough in my life all these years, and I thought I want to now change it slightly. But I didn't know how. I didn't know how to tell my clients. It was like a fear because, oh my God, what am I going to do? Letting everybody down, you know. So I knew there was a point that it was gonna happen. So while I was at the retreat, I'd finished all my work, all 23 clients through the 7 days that I was working. The final night, which is always a beautiful night, it is called a flower ritual. Now, the word ritual is being killed. But it's basically, you sit around in your chairs in a round circle, and I create a little circle with flowers and crystals and lots of other things. And it's like a little bit like a shamanic kind of work, and it isn't spooky or anything, but it's very powerful. Anybody who creates a circle can create great energy. So this is the final night, and now I'm going to invite people into that circle and to heal them in deeper ways than they could ever understand. It goes beyond any understanding at all. So they just sit there. They don't need to do anything or say anything. I just begin the work. So I start the work, and a lady from Korea, beautiful soul, came into the circle after around about the 8th person. She sits down, and all of a sudden I start to get a little bit nervous. Why? Because normally I was led to believe all my life that when you create a circle, no darkness can enter into that circle whatsoever. So if there is attachments, if you believe in that, or dark energy, there's no way you can be in that circle, because you've created something so beautiful and powerful that it can't come in. Well, this lady sat down and then started to literally scream. And apparently people could hear it very far away. It was in the middle of the night. So I had to start my work with, this has never happened before. So I asked everybody in the circle, around the circle, please help me and send good energy. I was fighting a force that was attached to her all her life, and it was a very powerful force. It probably lasted 30 to 40 minutes of trying to clear this energy away by placing my hands on her stomach and on her heart and on her head and working and almost like praying. It's not a prayer, it's just asking for help. She was screaming so loud, but everybody, surprise, surprise, around was really working hard, and it's almost like they knew what they were doing. So they were sending this great, beautiful love towards this lady. After half an hour, this entity disappeared and she was fine. I finished the night, all 23 or 24 attendees, and I went to bed. In bed, I all of a sudden started feeling a very strange sensation. It started feeling like I'd just been to the gym and done an hour exercising, heavy exercising in my heart. Then I got a pain in my head and it ran down my arm. It was pins and needles, but it was really painful. And all of a sudden I started sweating profusely. At that point, I knew I was having a heart attack. It was something that shocked me to my core, but yeah. I went into my healing mode. I closed my eyes, went into meditation, relaxed, placed my hand on my heart, placed the other hand in the air, and called for healing. At that moment, I started crying and I said, just keep me alive long enough so I can see my grandson, because he hadn't been born and it was only like a week till he was going to be born. And I kept praying for that moment. It lasted 8 hours. I woke up the next morning and I was okay. It was that point that I realized I cannot do this work anymore. And that is a true story, Richard. Wow. That's how I started with the book.
That's amazing, that. And how, I mean, in terms of time, how long ago and how do you feel now?
I'm fine. The heart attack was called, my doctor said, doctor in the village, he said it was a silent heart attack, and people do get them when they're under severe stress. So that was a couple of years ago. And now I'm fine, because that was the point where I realized that, you know what, only that, I mean, you probably all figured it out, but it was only that would have stopped me from doing the one-to-ones anymore. So I'm thankful for that happening. So I don't fear it. I don't fear death, because there's no such thing as death. In fact, I look forward to moving into the light one day. When I feel the time is right, I'll be happy to go. If I go tomorrow, it's also fine. I don't fear death. That's why the darkness can't affect me in any way, no matter what happens. Did I think that was dark energy? I don't. Do I think that was a very clever message from the spirit world to say, hey, this is a warning and you need to slow down? So now I slowed down and then created a YouTube channel, and then all of a sudden it's now hitting over 100,000+, and people come and listen every day. So now I'm able to touch more people all over the world than just one-to-one. So how clever is the universe?
Yeah, it's amazing, really. The thing about the YouTube videos, it's an oasis of calm, that. Because when I was looking at, I mean, I drop in very regularly, at least a couple of times a week. You know, when you're putting together a radio show, there isn't too much time to watch things, so I like to be pretty careful with what I choose to watch. But yours is almost like a visual video meditation, really, in terms of you could be talking about anything. And it's always interesting, of course it is, and enlightening and challenging. But your place is beautiful, and it kind of resonates, which is an amazing thing, you know, through a computer screen. It's an oasis, really. And it's hugely popular, and I'm not surprised that it is. Mark Bajerski is our guest, markbajerski.com. And just not to get away from the book, because I'm glad you sent it to me. It's got it's got a beautiful cover. And I don't lie, so I haven't read it yet, but I have every intention of reading it. And when I do read it, we'll get you back on so we can talk about it. Seeing the Invisible, True Stories of Mysteries and Enlightenment, Mark Bajerski, published by Lemon House. Our listeners will want to check it out. So how do they do that?
Well, at the moment, you can get it on ebook on my website, but the publishing is all happening right now. So when it comes out, I'll let everybody know, and they can always go to the website, see it there through Lemon House. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm excited, Richard, because the people who have read it now, have come back to me and said, you know, it couldn't have been a more beautiful book over this moment of being locked down, because it actually has so much information of how to heal and to understand what's going on and the bigger picture. So yeah. I couldn't have planned it better, even if I tried. So it's always wonderful that I believe that this universal energy knows exactly when to do things. That's why, Richard, I don't fear the darkness, because I believe that there's a stronger source of light that knows exactly what's happening and is well ahead of the darkness. But I think that we come here to be challenged. I think our life here is to be challenged. And one of the things I often say to people is that when you come to me down on your knees because things have gone wrong, you've lost loved ones, everything feels like it's a bad, bad place to be, I say that you are the strongest lion and warrior in this world, because what you go through is your measuring stick to how powerful you truly are. You do not come into this world in a sense of, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. You come into this world wanting to experience the biggest challenge, because you are a warrior in the light. When you are at home, you want to experience certain things to see how you overcome them. That's, in my humble opinion, the most powerful message that anybody could receive when they're feeling bad. So my worst suffering has been my greatest light and power to be able to stand up and say, you know what? I conquered that. I know what it feels like. I know how to overcome that. Now move on to the next challenge.
You know, my favorite fictional character, it's going to sound a bit silly now, but my favorite fictional character is Rocky. I love Rocky. And not least because the character is a beautiful person who does a lot of good for people. He does a lot of good for his brother-in-law, Paulie, who breaks his balls, and he's horrible, Paulie. He does a lot of good for everybody. And in the comeback film, which I think came out about 12 or 13 years ago, there's a lovely line in it. Stallone's a good writer, and Rocky's a beautiful character. He says to his son, I think something along the lines of, life is not about how hard you can hit. It's actually about how hard you can get hit, but keep moving forward. And I thought, yeah.
That is absolutely so true. And that's what it's about. It's exactly that message that, you know what? You only know how powerful you are when you get to the steepest of mountains. When you've slipped and fell and you keep climbing and you get scratched and you get punched and you get hurt as you're climbing that mountain, people attack you and abuse you and you keep climbing. When you get to the top of that mountain, only then you really appreciate what life is about. And I think we're all climbing our mountain right now and we're nearly at the top.
That's a beautiful way to leave it today. Thanks for coming back on the programme. When I've read the book, the Caroline, my oft-mentioned other half, is a huge admirer of yours. I think she'd run away with you if she had the opportunity, to be honest. But she's looking. I've got to get her one of those e-readers. I'll get her a Kindle or something to put the book on. It was very decent of you to send it. Just before I forget, let me give it a mention again. Mark's book is called Seeing the Invisible: True Stories of Mysteries and Enlightenment. Go to markbajerski.com, published by Lemon House. The e-book is available. It'll be in print very soon. And I just want to reiterate, Mark's website is markbajerski.com. That was a tonic that I needed, my friend. Honestly.
Richard, you know, from not just me, but I got to know you a while ago, and I know a lot of your friends and a lot of your listeners are my friends now, and we send you love every day and healing. We care for you. And I always try to end this show by saying to everybody out there, you know, I don't know what I'd do without this show. I don't know what I'd do without you speaking the truth and going through what you do, the challenges and tests and what you see and how you have to cope with it and your rants that you need to put out there to wake people up. Because there's only a certain type of person who's able to do that, a real true warrior that you are. So I would say to everybody today, just if you can, it's a challenging time at this moment. And I'm talking about the ones who are blessed enough to have a few pounds. I really would love you all to donate to the Richie Allen Show to keep this show going. It's our show. It's not Richie's. It's not Richie's show. It's our show. And we can get people who come on this show to speak their truth that keeps the energy high and keeps the voodoo at bay. So please, guys, even if it's one euro, £1, please donate after this show if you really, truly love this man, because many people donate to many different places and not always it goes to the right place and it does the right thing, as we all know. But we know we can trust Richie with all our heart, and he puts his life and soul into this show. So please show your gratitude and help him like I do every day.
You didn't have to say that, but thanks so much for saying it, Mark. I know you mean it, and it's greatly appreciated. And it goes right back to you, mate. Love you too, and your amazing family. Continued success to you there in Spain and beyond, and we'll talk again real soon. MarkBajerski.com is the website, and if you go to YouTube.com, subscribe to Mark's channel. It's beautiful. The meditate, it's not meditations. The thoughts, the lessons, the conversations he has with his audience. It's very intimate from his beautiful home. I can't recommend it highly enough. All the best, and let's talk again real soon. Cheers, my friend.
Okay, love you, Richie.
Cheers, Mark. The brilliant Mark Bajerski, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Monday, May 4th. My God, I'm looking at the screen. It says 4th of the 5th. May the 4th, of course, 2020. MarkBajerski.com, top man. Going to take a tune while I get some tweets, because a lot of tweets came in there, and I'll read some of those out before we wrap up. Thanks again to Mark Bajerski. Here's a lovely bit of music from the Spencer Davis Group. Yeah, my honorary mammy in let's just say in the west of Ireland, honorary mammy likes a bit of 60s and 70s music. Not too keen on anything past 1975 or thereabouts. Spencer Davis Group, keep on running on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I think Tony Gosling is on the programme tomorrow. There's some exciting stuff happening later in the week. But for some reason, I don't have the diary. This fabled diary that I have, where I keep notes in about who's coming up. I'm not the most best organised guy of all time, to be honest. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Tony coming back on the show. He escaped from New Zealand. Managed to get back home. He's in Bristol, of course. The politics show thisweek.org.uk. He'll be on the programme. Massive shout out again to Mark Bajerski, whom only the people who know him will know how much he does for people, and often at a cost to himself financially. He mightn't like me saying that now, but he's a rare breed, and I'm a cynic. I think I'll always be a cynic. I've got a lot of love in me, I think. I think I have. I've got a lot of decency in me, but I am very cynical, you know. I'm going to keep my word on that nonsense in London. I'm not going to say any more on it, other than to advise you to be very careful about where you send your money when people are asking for $1 million for digital platforms and you jump on it because, you know, you're fed up. You're like everybody else. You're fed up of the media. You're fed up of the lies. You're fed up of the fear. But do a little bit of research into the people that are asking you for the money. These slick former bankster types claiming to be the most dangerous men in the digital world, telling lies about broadcasting from a secret bunker. You've got to wise up to it. Why do I do it? We were taught, you know, I've worked at every bloody level. That's not a boast, it's just a fact. One of the things they do is, they quite rightly tell you, don't ever talk about the opposition or the competition. Because by doing that, you're drawing attention to them. Like at WRFM, no presenter would have ever made any comment about 96FM in Cork or South Coast or South East Radio. It's a stupid thing to do. Now, I'm not in competition with anybody. The independent media is different. But when I see an obvious con job, I have to say it, because my motivation is genuinely that you don't get sucked into it the way you got sucked in by people like Ken O'Keefe. I remember some of you were the same people abusing me then that are screaming now because you're cheesed off because you desperately want to believe in this guy in London. And you're having a go at me now because you want to believe in him. And you're only wasting your energy because I've got very thick skin. You can say whatever you want to me. I'm trying to protect you. When it comes to this type of thing, I'm a bit more experienced than you. I know when somebody's trying to fleece you with get-rich-quick courses and Bitcoin and all this bollocks. So don't fall for it. And David Icke has got nothing to do with any of this. David Icke is a researcher and a journalist, and he'll talk to anybody whereby he feels that he has an audience. It's got nothing to do with him. He's right to talk to that guy or anybody else. It's his own business. It's got nothing to do with him at all. I don't know why you'd even draw some notion that it's some sort of criticism of David Icke. It isn't. I'm telling you, to watch this guy, he's a world-class bullshitter, this guy in London, whose name is Rose, I think, and he's dangerous. And he sees a market. People are fed up, they're cheesed off, they're scared, they're worried. And this guy's got the snake oil. And he's jumping on what he sees as a truth movement because it's ripe to steal people's money by bullshitting them and putting videos of himself online boxing and doing press-ups and breakdancing and selling you courses to help you get rich quick, asking you about the equity in your house. This guy's a fucking fraud. All right? I'm tired of telling you about guys like him. You cried when I bitched about O'Keefe years ago and told you it's a pyramid scheme and you gave your money. And then you came back to me and said, oh, Richie, we should have listened to you. Of course you should have listened to me. Do you know why? Because the BBG's got a big old fucking brain on him, that's why. He's not stupid, you know. Mark Boyarsky is an angel on earth. Thank you, Mark. This is for you, buddy. Bye for now. Speak tomorrow. Bye now.